from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Actor Nick Offerman plays mustachioed manly man Ron Swanson in NBC's Parks and Recreation. He's the burly libertarian, the anti-government government boss of Amy Poehler in the show's Pawnee, Indiana. Here's his Ron Swanson making libertarian humor at a Pawnee city meeting.
The government in this town is excellent and uses your tax dollars efficiently.
I don't know about that laugh. This show's Ron Swanson loves red meat and woodworking, hates his ex-wives, both named Tammy, and has a good heart, although he'd prefer no one knew that. Swanson's a throwback and a hot, hip character all at the same time. In real life, actor Nick Offerman grew up on a farm somewhere west of Pawnee and danced ballet. This hour on Point, actor Nick Offerman on Ron Swanson, red meat and being manly, and the rest of life. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on, as the soft-hearted brute with the Mike Ditka mustache won you over. What's your question on manly manness and the cosmos for Nick Offerman, the actor who plays Ron Swanson? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Later in the hour, we'll listen back to a bit of our interview with singer and icon Lou Reed, who died over the weekend at age 71. But first, joining me now from New York is Nick Offerman. He plays Ron Swanson on Parks and Recreation, NBC. He's author of the new book of personal tips and personal history, Paddle Your Own Canoe, One Man's Fundamentals for Delicious Living. Nick Offerman, welcome to On Point. Thanks a lot for being here.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Take us inside the head of your character for a minute. Your head ranges much more widely, and I look forward to talking about that. But how do you conceive this character, Ron Swanson?
Well, first and foremost, when asked such a question, I have to doff my cap to our incredible room of writers at Parks and Rec, led by Mike Schur, who comes from Saturday Night Live and then the American Office. They're just masterful at taking parts of my personality and boiling them down in their Ivy League crucible of lampoon, and writing them quite simply, and so they make it quite easy. You know, they make a simple job of something that would be much more difficult for me. If somebody said, "Give us something funny here about steak," I would ramble on for a few sentences, and they give me five well-chosen words where I say, ah, yes, you have been very well-educated.
So
thank you.
What are they working with here, Nick? What's the idea behind Ron?
Well, I feel like when you ask the clown why the children are crying, he has a hard time discerning that from behind the makeup and the squeaky horn. But my guess is that it's a sensibility in this modern age of information and technology and unlimited choice. We have achieved a level of comfort and convenience in our modern nation that allows us to become very soft. And you know, the toughest decision on any given day might be, you know, kale or spinach salad for lunch. And I think that, you know, they've tapped into something with Ron that harkens to a time before we had all of these choices where a person could have a very happy, rewarding life only choosing eight simple rules to live by. You know, I only consume milk, and that's whole milk. There is no other milk. Everything else is water. And I think that really appeals to people who, you know, I think that... in general, we have a sort of national ennui that is created by, oh, I don't know what I should do with my time. Should I work? Should I go on Facebook? Should I play some sort of Candy Ninja game? Should I listen to any of the myriad choices of music or film or television that are available at any given moment on this screen in my pocket? And here's this man who says, here's what you should do today. Chop firewood, light a fire, read a book. And that, I think, is just really comforting and appealing. Yeah, and people say, thank you. God, just tell me what to do.
Keep it simple. Ron Swanson keeps it simple right here. Here's a little clip from Season 5, Episode 9, Nick Offerman's Ron Swanson.
Recently, I made a chair. When I was finished, I thought it was a good chair. I submitted it to the Indiana Fine Woodworking Association, who felt it merited consideration for an award. It's been a real whirlwind.
Ron Swanson keeps it simple right there, but he brings his politics all the time as well. Here he is. Of course, this is the pilot way back. Leslie Amy Poehler asked the boss, her boss, the director of Department of Parks and Recreation, Ron Swanson, played by Nick, to let her turn an abandoned lot into a park. And city employee Swanson lets loose his inner libertarian here.
I've been quite open about this around the office. I don't want this parks department to build any parks because I don't believe in government. I think that all government is a waste of taxpayer money. My dream is to have the park system privatized and run entirely for profit by corporations, like Chuck E. Cheese. They have an impeccable business model. I would rather work for Chuck E. Cheese.
Privatize the parks, and against his better judgment, he has whisked off to Europe in the current season 6. Not so happy about it. Here's Ron Swanson.
History began on July 4th, 1776. Everything before that was a mistake. Diane suggested we tag along to London for a honeymoon. I agreed because my love for her trumps my hatred for Europe. Then she hit a phase of morning sickness that knocked her for a loop and decided to stay home. But she insisted I go and take pictures for her. All of this could have been avoided if we'd followed my plan for a honeymoon. A steak dinner, a glass of Lagavulin whiskey, then vigorous lovemaking for 2 hours, and we're both asleep by 8:30.
Ron Swanson of NBC's Parks and Recreation, Nick Offerman, plays it. And Nick, you say they built it partly off you. Did they have a fully formed character in mind before they tapped you for the part?
Well, they had building blocks, I think, for all the characters. You know, they built the cast very organically, and they said, you know, obviously, okay, here's what we want to do with Amy, our figurehead, our leader, our hero, and here's what we think will be funny about her, and then, you know, here's Aziz Ansari, how can we incorporate his incredible comedy skills into our stories and so forth down the line. And with Ron, I think the central notion was they had met a government employee in their research for the show who was a libertarian working in a parks department who really shared those beliefs. She wanted to bring the government down from within with her inaction. And they just thought that was a really funny idea and someone they could turn into sort of a Lou Grant curmudgeon to pit against Amy's lead character. So they sort of started with that template. And we met. I had known the creators a little bit, and they said, well, here's what helps fill in the template. This guy, we've seen him with a good mustache. Let's get that mustache back. He loves meat and scotch. He's a woodworker. They really capitalized on my woodworking,
which in fact you were and are.
They came and visited my shop and said. Said you are an incredibly intense nerd about woodworking. We would love to ring that for comedy, and I said I'm going to take that as a compliment. Thank you, gentlemen.
And so here you are. I mean, the next thing you know, you're kind of a breakout character. You are a breakout character on this show, and I've done a little research, Nick, and even among quite young people. There's this iconic status for your manly madness, partly tongue-in-cheek and partly not, partly fascinated by Ron Swanson's character here. And you remind us in the book that you're a farm kid from Illinois, kind of shockingly close to my own home turf, who was also not just a woodworker and canoe builder, but a theater major who studied ballet. Wait a minute. We thought you were Mike Ditka.
Well, I would never purport to be anywhere near the kind of edifice that Mike Ditka has been. I like to remind people, especially when they ask me about the subject of manliness, that I am in fact, you know, a classically trained thespian, and I did study a couple semesters of ballet in college because when given a list of electives, like you're required to take one of these, right. That was the one where you could watch girls in leotards. I mean,
all right.
I'm not ashamed. I was 18 years old, and I liked looking at ladies.
Sure. How were your moves?
They were perfectly mediocre, I'm sure. I I mean, I was an athlete. I was a football player, and I have always tried hard. My dad always said, if you're going to do a job, do it right. And so I gave it my best shot, but nobody asked me to stick around and join in any of the dance department productions, that's for sure.
But this role goes right on. Are you surprised at how popular your manly man characterization has become just for that?
I suppose I am surprised. Coming from an incredibly salt-of-the-earth family in central Illinois, the town of Minooka, where, you know, my two sisters, in my opinion, are probably more manly than I am. And I mean that not as a disparagement, but just that they're incredibly capable. So when people say, wow, you're sure are manly, I say, well, I'm playing a role, you know, that a guy that has a cabin where instead of ever watching anything on TV, he goes to his cabin and chops firewood and hunts for some dinner. And that's a wonderfully idealized world. But, you know, I come from a place where I'm an artist, and I like to think about manliness more in terms of standing by one's ideals and being able to use a screwdriver, either Phillips or standard head.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Nick Offerman, the actor, woodworker, big mustache, who plays manly man, libertarian Ron Swanson on NBC's series Parks and Recreation. He's out with a new book, Paddle Your Own Canoe, One Man's Fundamentals for Delicious Living. What do you think? Is Nick Offerman's Ron Swanson bringing back manly manness? Has he surprised you, warmed you up to the gruff, meat-eating, manly man libertarian? Made your eyes roll? What's your favorite Ron Swanson moment from Parks and Recreation? The last episode of season 4, while waiting for the results of his employee Leslie's run for city council, that's Amy Poehler, of course, Ron Swanson, played by Nick Offerman, has a drink with Ben, who's a step up from him in city government and Leslie's boyfriend. Ben asks Ron Swanson, about a promotion he just got in Washington, which would separate him from Leslie.
Well, I've never been one for meeting new people or doing new things or eating new types of food, or traveling outside of southern Indiana. I've had the same haircut since 1978, and have driven the same car since 1991. I've used the same wooden comb for 3 decades. I have one bowl. I still get my milk delivered by horse.
You do?
But you and Leslie like to hold hands and jump off of cliffs together, into the great unknown. You two have a good relationship. I don't personally know what that's like, but I'm given to understand it means you're going to land on your feet.
The soft heart of Ron Swanson, he has two exes named Tammy. His new book is, Nick Offerman's new book is Paddle Your Own Canoe. Nick, let's listen to our listeners for a second here. Joanna in Santa Monica, California. Joanna, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, what do you think?
I'm such a fan of Nick Offerman, and Ron Swanson is such a great character. He reminds me of my stepdad, who is my hero, and I feel like guys like my stepdad and Ron Swanson don't get represented in popular culture. So I'm just so grateful to Nick bringing Ron Swanson every week, and I love his fascination with bacon and snacks in his pocket. It's my stepdad all the way. So thank you so much.
Hey, just a big thanks. What do you love about it, Joanna? What is it, the salt of the earth thing? What exactly attracts you?
I love that he wears those button-down, those knits to work. My stepdad also wears those knit shirts, and he works for the government, and I just love seeing him every week.
Joanna, I appreciate your call. Nick, she loves seeing it, you know, that you are representing the underrepresented, what, kind of stiff upper lip, dorky, manly man, libertarian. Is that guy underrepresented in our society today, Nick?
I suppose so, or perhaps in popular culture because there's nothing particularly hip. My whole life wearing Carhartt's work gear to work in and work boots and trucker caps from my family's farm, I've watched all of my wardrobe items come in and out of fashion with the hip-hop kids or the breakdancing kids. And much the same, I feel like, you know, maybe a an honest, hardworking mentality is now becoming hip for a moment.
Hey, can we go to that farm for a minute? Because I, in all my years doing this, I've never had a guest before from quite so close to my own home turf there. I mean, you're from Minooka. This is, what, 50 miles or so outside of Chicago, not so far from Joliet. I'm from Bloomington, way on down the pike, maybe 120 miles from Chicago. But you went to University of Illinois, which is closer to where I grew up. Your family farm experience like mine. I've never had anybody I could ask about walking beans as a kid before or castrating hogs. And both of those are here in Paddle Your Own Canoe right in my backyard.
Crazy. I believe that means you should have good manners and carry a handkerchief if you hail from Normal.
Yes, indeed. I do carry a handkerchief. Does that make me a Carhartt proud nerd alongside you there, Nick?
Well, it does. That's the thing is we have done it our whole lives, and we won't do it ironically or because we saw it in Maxim magazine. And then when it falls out of fashion, we'll still be doing it because because it's an excellent accessory, not because it looks cool.
Castrating hogs, I remember it very well. It'd be, you know, early in the spring, and there'd be a whole lot of young ones penned up there. The vet would come. All the old farmers would gather. They'd have us boys holding them up by their rear legs or splashing on that purple antiseptic that one never forgets. It's so harsh.
It is, yeah. It's an incredible lesson in life. Just yesterday, I was at this incredible farm-to-table operation outside of Champaign-Urbana called Prairie Fruits Farms, and we were having a fundraiser for a place called Japan House at the University of Illinois, and it was so it was like Michael Pollan had designed this place out of his imagination. They mainly raise goats, and they milk the goats and make cheese and also sell the milk. And it was so satisfying to be back among the people of agriculture. And you can just see the couple who runs the place, this really charismatic couple named Wes and Leslie. You can see on their faces how rewarding their life is without ever having to worry about anybody's blog or what's going on the internet. And I think in the fast-paced life of showbiz in which I exist, to me, that's the most idyllic fantasy, is to think about just to be out in the middle of the cornfields growing some potatoes would be a wonderful vacation.
indulge me one more here, because it's just so rare. Walking beans, interesting for several reasons. One is it's practically gone now because of Roundup and weed killer, and they barely need to do it anymore. But you were sort of at the very end of that period, which I was in the thick of, where this was a job done by hand by tended to be young kids on the farm. And I must have spent 100,000 hours doing it as a child. You say many modern urbanites would find this activity repugnant or even impossible. Describe it, Nick.
Well, you imagine an expansive rolling field of rows of soybeans, and you know, they come up to your mid-thigh or your waist, and in those soybeans are evil weeds that are stealing the water and nutrients and sunlight from your crop. And so there's nothing to be done but to pick up a hoe or a machete. We called it a corn knife. Mm-hmm. Put a sharp edge on it. And as far as you could see to your right or left, maybe four or six rows to either side, you would walk the length of the field and try to take the life of every nutrient-stealing weed.
and these fields are vast.
Yeah, I mean, you turn around, move over 10 rows and come back and you do it all day long for weeks on end, and it's just like a gardener pulling weeds. It's just that you've got a hell of a lot more acreage than most grower of herbs.
Just many, many, many acres. You say the urbanites would find this repugnant, but you're right. In our family, we always had the ability to tuck into tedious work with a positive attitude and the knowledge that a cold soda pop or beer was waiting at quitting time, or just that jug of water wrapped in rags at the end of the row, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, nothing makes water more delicious than hard work. I think anybody who has run a race or even just gone on a long hike at the end of that, water is suddenly much more incredibly delicious than the finest soda that's ever passed through your lips.
Not least in Illinois summer heat and humidity, which can pin the needle.
Certainly. We learned all about sunblock at a young age out in the fields.
Talk about Ron Swanson and women. He has got politics that are quite opposed to Amy Poehler's character, Leslie Knope, and yet he's got this big soft spot for Amy Poehler's character.
Well, you know, he has his views on government, which are very strong, but he also is a loyal friend. And so often those two will come into conflict because his friend that he admires because of her tenacity and her own set of values will be trying to push through some sort of government project, which he abhors. But ultimately, friendship, I think, wins the day. And so he finds himself reluctantly supporting his friend, even though her cause is repugnant to him.
What's it like playing that role up against Amy Poehler in her role, just playing opposite Amy Poehler?
Well, it's much, I imagine, like playing one-on-one basketball with Michael Jordan. You just try and hang on to the ball once in a while, but mostly you're just marveling at his prowess. And Amy is just an incredible performer. You know, she is like an entire comedy troupe all in one explosive little package. And so the first thing you have to do is take a deep breath and steel yourself because you're not allowed to laugh uproariously while shooting a scene with her. And fortunately, I'm very grateful that Ron is a man of few words because that allows me to go into deep meditation and focus on keeping a straight face.
Just tamp it down and be a man.
Yeah. I mean, she with her years of experience running her Upright Citizens Brigade Theater and then being such a team leader at Saturday Night Live,
yeah.
I come from you know, straighter, legit theater where a cast works collaboratively to achieve, you know, the works of Chekhov or Sam Shepard mm-hmm. or Martin McDonagh or what have you. But she comes from a world where it's like a team of athletes banding together. It's like an Olympic dream team or something, mm-hmm. yeah, where she says, okay, everybody, everyone knows that I have the best jump shot, so let's all figure out how to do this, and I'll make sure everybody gets to pass the ball, and, you know, you're good at rebounding, so you stand over there. And it's incredibly educational to watch Amy lead our crew. In a very lucky spot.
Nick Offerman plays Ron Swanson on NBC's Parks and Recreation. He's out with a new book, Paddle Your Own Canoe, One Man's Fundamentals for Delicious Living. A lot of red meat in there. Lots of sexual pleasure in the Ron Swanson mind and in Nick Offerman's telling. Lots of hard work and woodworking as well. Denise is calling from, well, right out there in the cornfield, Springfield, Illinois. Denise, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
It's just wonderful to hear Nick online. Actually, he has a twin in Springfield, Illinois, and he's my husband, Kurt, who is actually a libertarian married to a Democrat, if you can imagine that.
Sounds Ron Swanson territory.
Absolutely. But he also is a red meat eater, and he's a computer geek, and he is a woodworker. And currently he's refurbishing an 1870s desk for his wife, who is a historian. And I just wanted to comment that Ron's role is beautifully illustrates the libertarian. And also, as a person that works in the museum industry, Leslie beautifully portrays the people that try to keep those organizations going. But I wanted to see Ron. My favorite episode was when all of you went out on a camping trip and someone shot you. It wasn't funny to be shot, but it was funny the way you reacted to it.
How did he react, Denise? I didn't see that one.
He was like, I can't believe you shot me. And I think Leslie did it accidentally, but someone else took the blame for a short time.
Oh, Denise, thanks so much for your call, and keep that relationship going right across. We need more of those relationships that span those poles. Thanks for your call. Nick, what about the camping scene where you take a shot?
We go on a hunting trip, and somebody inadvertently pulls the trigger, and Ron takes a load of buckshot to the back of the head, which came about because I had asked my writers. I usually don't have that much hair, and I certainly never sport a coif like Ron does. And if, sometimes it gets old, and I'd asked the writers, could we figure out a way that I could shave my head, please?
For the show, because you describe his haircut as, what is it, the full douche. The full douche, right, okay.
Yes, it is a masterful work achieved in the hair and makeup trailer.
Yes, no doubt.
Every morning.
So you got the buckshot, you get the bald head.
Yeah, they said, what can we do to Ron's head? Let's shoot him. And it was a lot of fun. One of the great things about, you know, the setting of our show is that we get to go outside a lot and shoot in the woods. And not everybody on the crew enjoys being out in the woods because there are bugs or there's not central air. But for my money, being out in the beautiful forest in some canyon in California and being paid to be photographed there is pretty nice work if you can get it.
Parks and Recreation came along as kind of a bolt from the blue after a lot of work for you. You describe actually breaking down in tears when you got the news that you would have this role. It wasn't clear it was going to work out so magnificently. I mean, you were doing woodworking and carpentry in Hollywood and L.A., not just because you love it, but to make a living.
Sure, yeah. I mean, as a theater actor, you are paid great dividends by the theater, but unfortunately, it's not usually in the currency of dollars. And so while working as a theater actor and sporadically as a film and TV actor, I was also supporting myself with my tools. And you know, I had been through a lot of exciting near misses where there were big chances and opportunities that just down to the wire, you know, that they finally said, no, we're going to go with another guy or we're not going to make the show. And so when I first saw the writing for Parks and Recreation, both my wife Megan and I said, holy cow, this is it. This really fits your voice well. This is really exciting. We were huge fans of The Office, and Greg Daniels, who created that, co-created our show with Mike Schur, who was writing on The Office at the time. And so when everything looked like it was going to happen, I had learned to inure myself from having any feelings about it.
Auditioning and hopes.
Yeah. You have these big chances and you get all excited and then you're absolutely crushed when it doesn't happen. And so this was a long audition process. And so when I finally got the call that I got the job, it was 15 years in the business denying myself any emotional resolution. Came out on the phone, and I said to my boss, who called me, Mike Schur, I'm just going to openly sob with gratitude. Please keep talking.
And he did, and you did, and from that, Ron Swanson gets born. We'll talk about Megan Mullally as well. You've got a great, lots of life advice in Nick Offerman's new book, Paddle Your Own Canoe, but a great chapter on Love Your Woman. You describe her, Megan Mullally, as my best friend, my legal property, my wife. This is an interesting book. It's kind of an amalgam of what your voice and Ron Swanson's voice, both in here, Nick.
There's actually very little Ron Swanson in the book. There's a few nods to fans of the show because I know a lot of people that buy the book will be doing so because they're fans of Ron.
My legal property? You know, that sounds a little Swanson-y to me.
I suppose it does. I mean, there's probably, you know, because they draw a lot of Ron from my life and my sense of humor, there are things that I say that will sound like Ron. That's just an old joke, you know, that's something between Megan and I. We have a lot of funny nicknames for each other. And, you know, it's a facetious way of saying I am completely devoted to my wife. And
that's my woman.
Yeah.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Nick Offerman, the actor, woodworker, big mustache guy who plays manly man, libertarian Ron Swanson on NBC's series Parks and Recreation. He's out with a new book, a little bit about his personal history, a little bit about life advice. It's called Paddle Your Own Canoe, One Man's Fundamentals for Delicious Living. Before we're finished here today, we'll listen back to a little bit of my 2003 interview with Lou Reed, who died over the weekend at 71. But, Nick, lots of callers for you. Let me go to John in Hyde Park, Massachusetts. John, you're on with Nick Offerman.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Very well. What do you say?
Well, first off, I want to say thank you to Mr. Offerman for all the great laughs that I've been able to share with friends and family. You know, thanks to the character Ron Swanson.
And, my pleasure.
I want to explain that a lot of the appeal to the character, for me at least, is I cannot watch one episode or one thing that Ron Swanson says that doesn't remind me of a life lesson that my father tried to instill on me as I was a kid. And as you grow up and you move in the world, and we're not exactly in the kind of world my father even grew up in anymore, and you kind of lose little bits of, you know, work hard, do what's best for yourself and for the people around you, as well as hold yourself accountable for your own actions and things of that nature. And every time I see Ron Swanson on screen, whether he's making a joke or, you know, a libertarian point, I'm reminded a little bit of that, and I think it's good for those kind of values to be pushed back into the forefront of the world.
Good advice, maybe from Ron Swanson there. Kind of fatherly advice he's often giving. John, I appreciate your call. Nick, there's a great story you convey in the book where you and your dad, I think you're in high school, you're driving home from a basketball game, it's snowing like crazy, and he's sort of reviewing the game with you, and you just pull over right on the gravel road that led to the farm, and you get out in the car, the headlights, in the night, in the snow, and he shows you how to, you know, watch the middle of the player you're defending against. Don't watch their head fake.
It's true, yeah. My dad has been an incredible teacher to me, as well as my mom and my whole family. I'm very lucky. I have a wonderful family in Illinois, and I think that's a great point, John. That's what is very appealing about Ron is that my dad sort of taught me, you know, the human condition is basically that of jackass. You know, we're subject to human nature, which means we're often going to make a lazy choice or make a mistake. And I learned early on, you know, he said, keep trying, do your best. You're going to make mistakes, and that's how you learn. So making mistakes is good so that you can learn to stop making them, and that's how you improve and so forth. And I have learned, you know, throughout my adult life that if making mistakes is the way to get ahead, then I'm doing pretty good.
I love that scene in the snow. You say you hope to make it into a scene in a show, movie maybe one day, or TV show. I hope you do. It's a beautiful scene. John,
thank you.
For,
yeah. It's quite moving to me. I feel like my friend Mike Mitchell, who did the illustrations for the book,
yeah,
captured it. I described it to him. You know, he didn't have a photograph to go off of, and
yeah,
he drew it perfectly. I love the generosity of my dad's tutelage, that he was like, you know what, we're not driving another inch.
Father and son, right there.
I'm going to show you what I'm talking about.
Yeah, on the gravel road, in the headlights, in the night, in the snow. Sarah in Lexington, Kentucky. Sarah, thanks for calling. You're on with Nick Offerman.
Hi, Tom. I'm sorry, my voice is probably going to shake. I'm a little bit nervous. but I just wanted to say hi to Nick and to tell him that I really appreciate the character that he plays. I don't know how much is representative of, you know, who he is in real life, but when I watch the show, I find myself connecting more to a conservative, you know, stance than I do in real life, and it's made me a little more open to individuals with different political views. So I think it's kind of interesting. I find myself being more tolerant because I just so enjoy the character that he plays. And I also wanted to say I've rewatched the season or the series pretty recently, and there's one episode where they shut down the Pawnee government, and I found that to be pretty hilarious. The look on his face, you know, when they announced that the government was shutting down is just priceless. And also, there's an episode where everybody gets drunk on this snake juice thing. And at the very end of the episode, Ron Swanson is just dancing and totally wasted. And there have been a few times in my life where I've been really depressed or you know, things just weren't going right that day. And I've watched literally 5 seconds of the last episode or the last part of that episode and laughed so hard out loud, which is pretty rare. And anyways, I'm rambling and I just wanted to say thank you so much. And you're so funny and awesome. And keep up the good work.
A little snake juice keeps Sarah going. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Hey,
Tom, yeah. Something I love about our show is that the show itself, you know, in this incredibly complicated day and age and a lot of bipartisanship going on in our country, I really appreciate that our show doesn't take a political stance, but instead the characters have different political stances. And our show, if anything, illustrates how, you know, we all have different needs and different feelings, but at the end of the day, we need to get along and share this town or this state or this country or this planet together. And so, you know, we're never going to all agree on everything, but, you know, maybe we can have a little taste of snake juice and have a dance party just the same.
And what about, I mean, Ron Swanson was over the moon happy when he shut down Pawnee, Indiana's fictional government there. We just came through a big national government shutdown. How do your politics compare to Ron's?
Well, you know, like Ron learned on that episode, regardless of his glee at a total government shutdown, ultimately that's not a very viable solution to our problems. And so, you know, I think that I really appreciate a lot of the building block tenets of the libertarian mentality. I love the notion that, you know, whatever people do on their private property, if they're not hurting themselves or others or someone else's property, then everybody can go to hell. You know, whatever you want to do should be fine. And I feel like that the amount of scrutiny on people's lives is shameful. And I appreciate the libertarian sensibility regarding that. But, you know, I think that My own politics involve I try to promote an open-mindedness and less partisanship in the country because, you know, there's so much Sturm und Drang arguing over pretty inconsequential issues when all the while we're, you know, falling deeper and deeper into an insurmountable debt. And so I encourage people – my big patriotic plan is to encourage people to make things with their hands, to knit shawls, cobble boots, Cooper barrels, and if we can all begin in a Jeffersonian way to support our own communities, you know, this guy grows the turnips, that lady raises the sheep, then we can, I think, take back our economy from some of the nations overseas that are holding our checkbook right now.
Hard to argue with a lot of that. One more right here, Brent in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Our time is short, Brent, but thank you for your call.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to tell Nick, well, first of all, one reason I love him is he just used the term Cooper in a sentence.
Yes, as in to make a barrel. Yes, sir.
That's right. And we kind of have a mutual person that we know in Oklahoma City. I shop at Bohemian Spirit. I love your character. And, Nick, when I watched the show, you were not my favorite to begin with. You've become my favorite character, but the reason I called today is because I am so impressed with your woodworking skills. And at some point, I mean, I've gone to your website. I've seen your shop. I'd like to go out there at some point and visit, and I'd really like to have somebody show me or help me or mentor me in making a Rushton Lapstrake canoe like Nessmuk used.
All right. You're right in Nick Offerman territory. Brent, our time is short, but thanks so much for that. Nick, describe the shop. It's a real shop. It's kind of a collective. You've got a lot of people building things there, and canoes not least in your history.
It is. Well, thank you, Brent. I sure appreciate it. And, we have a really nice shop in Los Angeles, and I was kind of working there mostly by myself, and then when Parks and Rec hit, I knew that I'd have a lot less time in the shop, and I either had to lock it up and shut the lights off or find some friends so that the shop could continue to have a prosperous life. And So I began to collect woodworkers and elves, and we have a wonderful little co-op situation going on. And they all my woodworkers create their own items, and they can put them up for sale at offermanwoodshop.com. And Christmas is a very popular time. There's mustache combs and wooden kazoos and cutting boards and some really great sundry items. And we also did a canoe this year on commission, but that's a little bit more painful of a price tag on the handmade canoe.
Yeah, I would guess so. Hey, how about that laugh? We heard it right off the bat in this hour. That must have cracked him up when you were walking beans. Is that your honest laugh?
I suppose so.
Manly
it's
man.
Funny when people ask me that. No, it's not a... it's not anything but my own chuckle. I'd like to experience mirth just like the next guy.
Hey, it was just been great to have you with us. The new book is Paddle Your Own Canoe, One Man's Fundamentals for Delicious Living from Nick Offerman, a.k.a. Ron Swanson, on NBC's Parks and Recreation. Hey, go Illinois Farm, Nick. Great to have you with us. Thanks a lot for joining us. Good luck. We'll be watching.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it.
In a moment, remembering rock and roll legend Lou Reed, this is On Point. Pioneer, the Velvet Underground's Lou Reed, died yesterday at his home in Amagansett, New York, on Long Island. After a failed liver transplant, he was 71. Lou Reed broke boundaries, inspired generations of musicians, and helped shape the subversive side of rock and roll. From early on, with I'm Waiting for the Man, from the Velvet Underground's first album in 1967, about going uptown to score drugs, Reed's persona was tough, urban, taboo-breaking, poetic, uncompromising. I talked with Lou Reed in 2003 about his Edgar Allan Poe-inspired album, The Raven, and about his early years with the Velvet Underground and his relationship with Andy Warhol. He described how he and John Cale worked with underground filmmakers in Greenwich Village in New York, playing music behind the movie screen.
People couldn't afford sound then, so we would sit behind the screen and we would do long instrumental things watching the movie at the time from the rear, mm-hmm. from the back of the screen, mm-hmm. sitting in back. Mm. And we were doing things like that, and that we were getting involved with a lot of what were called underground filmmakers who met at a place called the Cinematheque in New York, which is a place they also have in Paris. And we then got a job in this real dive in the village. They paid us a hamburger and a beer.
And that did it.
Well, you know, we didn't have anything, so even getting paid food was more than what we had.
And as you got to know Andy Warhol,
and
what was
somebody,
it
that, well, you know,
what was
somebody brought
there?
Him down. Mm-hmm. One of his people came down, saw us, and thought Andy should see this. So they brought Andy down, and we got fired that night. And Andy said, "Why don't you come with me?"
Was this Velvet Underground at that point?
Yeah. No, we were the Velvet Underground then. We were certainly as unknown can be. Mm-hmm. We're like minus unknown.
And there's the invitation to Andy Warhol's famous factory. Famous
yeah.
now, anyway.
Right. So, if, you know, we went, and then he had a week at the Cinematheque to do anything he wanted. This is kind of where some light shows and performance art started springing up. Mm-hmm. So he said, "Why don't you come there?" And he adopted us. We just became part of the factory. And then he did this show, and we did music, and he showed films on us.
On your bodies?
Yeah.
And all these years later, you cite Andy Warhol as the benchmark, as the notch in the tree that you might even judge yourself by.
What? Well, because he was always, I really admired him. I mean, I still do.
I'm trying to get at what the essence of that was.
That he's so smart, so talented, absolutely good at everything. Incredible. And anything you looked at, it would be interesting to see what Andy saw. and just so smart. It's very thrilling to be around people that smart, mm-hmm. that creative, that mm-hmm. smart. And he would always say to me, he said, you know, how many songs did you write? Because he worked 24 hours a day, yeah. every single day of the
All
week.
All the time.
Never stopped. And he would say to me, how many songs? I mean, I wrote about this on an album called Songs for Jolly. He said, how many songs did you write? I'd say, 5. He said, why didn't you write 10? You know, what's wrong with you? Why are you so lazy? You're just so lazy. I don't understand it.
Don't waste your time. Let it flow.
And then he would come in the next day and say, and how many did you write today?
That's merciless.
It would be different if it was coming from someone who wasn't themselves doing
it. But he was doing it. So take the example.
He was
pick
doing
it up, go.
15 paintings a day or whatever. You know, so
maybe you should have done silkscreen, Lou. Might have been easier.
No, because I know how good I am, and I know how fast I am.
Yeah.
And there was Andy. I said, uh-oh. This is what we've waited for all our lives. Here it is. This is the real thing.
Looking for soul food and a place. Lou Reed with us at On Point in 2003. To listen back to our full conversation, go to our website at onpointradio.org. Go out with Lou Reed's Walk on the Wild Side from the 1972 album Transformer, his one song that made the top 40, just part of the legacy of Lou Reed. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Jackie is just speeding away. Thought she was James Dean for a day. Then I guess she had to crash. Valium would have helped that patch. I said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey honey, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls say, doot 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 doot